Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 395 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 21st of September, 2018, as I record this before I head off to Florida. But actually, as this goes out into the world, I will be arriving back in the UK after speaking at the Novelists Inc. conference. So I will talk more about that next week. But today I have a super useful interview with Dave Chesson from Kindlepreneur on categories and Amazon ads and keywords. And Dave's tips have been really useful for me. So I know you'll find it useful. And even if there is some technical information in this, but also there's some mindset stuff as well. So definitely more evergreen than just the latest tools. So in publishing news, I actually wanted to talk about this article from last week from Mark Williams in the New Publishing Standard, which is a fantastic blog about the global publishing space. I've mentioned it before, and Mark does a great job. Mark lives in Africa and basically does a lot of articles that are nothing to do with the US and Amazon a lot of the time. He does cover Amazon, but does talk about lots of companies you might never have heard of, and also countries that generally get ignored by the mainstream publishing press. So really interesting article about the rise of audiobooks and the subscription model in Sweden, and sort of proposing that this is a futurist slash publishing piece of news. So 40% of books sold in Sweden are through subscriptions. The total book sales revenue increased by 6.2% last year, but it's digital that's leading the charge, and traditional book selling outlets are getting hammered. Mark says, the digital surge is being powered by audiobooks, with ebooks a distant second place. Not just a dramatic shift toward digital, but a sea change in the way books are consumed, with the possibility in the not too distant future that, in Scandinavia at least, the preferred format for book consumers will be audio. And he says, in a publishing dystopian future, might both print and ebook fall prey to the digital predator that is audio streaming. And I thought this was a very interesting article because of what also came out at the, what is it, I guess around the 20th of September 2018, where Amazon has brought out some new hardware. Amazon's Echo Input adds Alexa to any speaker. So previously you had to kind of buy the special speakers. We have the Dot. There are other speakers, but this input, and it's very small, the pictures, it's kind of fits in the palm of your hand, will add Alexa to any speaker. And also, and this I think is really interesting, Echo Auto means you can have Alexa in any car with a simple accessory. And this is probably what I'm going to get because I have, I've really been enjoying listening to Audible and then switching back to my Kindle to carry on reading in the evening. I definitely have found myself getting much more into that. Audible is now also on the new Apple Watch, which is interesting because, of course, Apple have their own audiobooks, but they have the Audible app on audiobook on the watch. So I think this, again, we've talked a lot about audio, but this is another kind of almost a look forward into what could happen if audio continues to become more and more dominant. Now, I at Nink, I have by now given a presentation on content marketing for fiction, and I have mentioned on the show that I am thinking and actually going to narrate some of my own fiction. I will start with short stories, but I have actually scheduled voice training with an actor and audiobook narrator for October and intend to do short stories before Christmas. I really believe that audio will continue to grow and grow, and voice as you know from this show, voice is both content marketing and another income stream. So I definitely feel this is something I want to invest in. I've mentioned this before, but there have been two responses to me saying that I will narrate some fiction. One is, don't do it. Authors narrating fiction is awful. And the other one is, please do it. Authors narrating their own books means they're even more special. And so I figured I would get the best of both worlds if I actually upskilled. I'm not going to do accents. I'm not becoming an actor. I will be doing a straight read. But because I know my own work, I will be able to give it much more attention, I guess. And also, I just think that, as I mentioned last week or the week before, as you get this, the way AI is expanding, the way voice synth is expanding, I just feel that personal branding has to be the way forward. And if I can gain fiction audience through my voice as much as I can through my writing, and I know that audio voice is just as important as author voice when it comes to audiobooks, then I just think this is something that I want to invest in. So as I mentioned, I will be having some voice coaching, and I probably need several sessions, obviously, but I will report back on that as I have it. So my personal update this week, my conspiracy thriller End of Days is on special. It is action adventure. It is kind of almost apocalyptic, kind of pre-apocalyptic. And I have a BookBub this week, actually. So if you fancy trying it, it is a good week to check it out. It is on special. So Arcane Thriller Book 9, although all of my books are pretty much standalone. You can read any of them. You don't have to start the series at book one. So that will be on special as an ebook. And what I have done, this is the most organized I've ever been for a fiction launch. I have updated the links at the back of the ebooks with the pre-order for Valley of Dry Bones, which goes out 23rd of October. So basically, I am going to, it'll be really interesting to see how my pre-orders go with a promotion on the book before with a link by store. As I said, I've never actually managed to organise that before. So we'll see. I'll also be doing some ads and other stuff. But really promoting book 9 so that hopefully people will pre-order book 10. Although book 9, End of Days, is set in, I said all around the world, but a lot in Israel. And Valley of Dry Bones is set kind of between Spain and New Orleans and San Francisco, and some in the Philippines, Peru. I get around. So today's show is sponsored by Ingram Spark. And I tell you what, I've been really, really grateful for Ingram Spark as the whole CreateSpace move to KDP print thing has gone on, because a whole load of my books on Amazon just kind of disappeared off as they're going through all their algorithm changes. And I'm so pleased I've had Ingram Spark there to sell my print books. Also, what's interesting is since I have been with Ingram Spark, I've mentioned this before, my print revenue share increased from 10% of my total book sales income to 21%. I've ended up in traditional bookstores because of having my books on Ingram Spark with a discount on, and I haven't even had to pitch for those. They have just appeared there. I have had my books at speaking events ordered by the on-site bookstores in the same way that they've ordered other traditionally published books, which again, never happened before. And also, I've had payouts from library collection services, which again, I never had before. So going with Ingram Spark really has increased my revenue from print, so much so that I now do normal paperback 5x8. I do workbooks for nonfiction. I do large print editions, and they also do hardbacks, which I am definitely getting into. It's just a case of, oh my goodness, I have so many books, but I am going to start doing hardbacks. you can put your books on Ingram Spark and your books will be available in catalogues alongside other, you know, traditionally published books. So people can order them more easily and at a discount. And you can order author copies at a great price. If you want to sell into schools, like Dave Hendrickson discussed, and also Karen English, for kids' books, then you can get discounts on bulk buys. And of course, remember, you can use both KDB Print and Ingram Spark now, so that you can reach much further than just Amazon. And I think that's my main message. You know, I've been banging the drum on this for many years now, which is, if you want to have a long-term income as an author, you need to be where books are sold. And Ingram Spark will get you where print books, and they do ebook distribution as well, but, you know, their expertise really is, you know, print focused. And you can get your books into all these different places by using Ingram Spark. And I use my imprint Curl Up Press to manage print distribution. So it's your content. Do more with it through ingramspark.com. Also, a big thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. And if you have started supporting the show this week, I will read your name out next week when I'm back from Florida. I really appreciate the support on Patreon, like your tweets and emails. It demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And you can support the show with just a couple of dollars a month, and you'll get that extra monthly Q&A audio when you can ask questions. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Dave Chesson. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Joanna. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Dave writes books under multiple pen names and is best known in the indie author community for creating KDP Rocket, and also for his useful blog and podcast at kindlepreneur.com. And today we're actually going to talk about a number of things that I'm quite excited about: search engine optimization, and also how to find and fix your book sales problems. So really exciting show today. But before we get into that, I wanted to know, Dave, a bit more about you and how you got into writing, and also helping authors with these cool tools. Because when I look at the market, there are definitely more lucrative markets for skills like yours.
Well, you know, it was, so I used to be in the US military. I was in the Navy. And the first job that they sent me out was without my family, all the way to Korea. So I was stuck alone, and my wife and kids were back in Wisconsin. And my wife kind of had one of those moments where she said, you know, is this what you want to do? Like, is this the definition of success? I said, wow, no, not really. So I started looking at ways of building a side business, you know, a way to potentially build something that would allow me to leave the military and be home with my family instead of on the other side of the world. The funny thing is, I've never credited myself as this amazing writer. As a matter of fact, something I haven't really shared ever is I have dyslexia. I mean, I'm like afflicted in my ability to write. If you ever watch me write on a board, it's like cringing. People even like will look like, ah, what are you doing? It's like a horror film to somebody, you know, just watching me, because it's all over the place. And if you ever receive a handwritten note from me, you thought that maybe I handed it to my 4-year-old son and said, here, write out. So the idea of me being a writer is just crazy. And I grew up with this self-imposed belief that I can't write. But what was interesting was that for me, I started to realize that when people go to Amazon, when they're looking for information, they're typing in information. They're telling us. They have a way of telling us what it is they truly want. And I learned in, you know, throughout life that if you have the answer that people are looking for, if you have the story that they really want, that you don't have to be Ernest Hemingway. You're delivering on what they truly need. And that allows someone like me, who's, you know, who has dyslexia, who's always considered themselves a poor writer, to be able to create things that helped people solve their problems or just gain a little enjoyment. And from that point on, I just fell in love because someone like me could finally write. And I also learned, too, the more you write, the better you get. And so from that point in, I just fell in love with this whole aspect. But more importantly, I also wanted my writing to get in front of people and to serve people. And so that's really how the journey from, you know, a physics major who like shunned from writing now just gets to sit down and just enjoy and benefit. And I will say, fast forwarding, today I am here in Franklin, Tennessee, with my family doing writing full time.
Which is fantastic. And I guess the other side of it is your SEO, your technical skills around Rocket. So did they teach you that in the Navy, or is that something you've also sort of skilled off at?
No. So I'm very data analytical. Matter of fact, before they sent me to Korea, I was actually a nuclear engineer for the Navy. And so, I mean, I'm a numbers guy.
You're a rocket scientist.
I really enjoyed the ability to look at numbers and make decisions based off of that. A lot of people were telling me that, just write a book, just whatever's in your heart. And I'm like, that's cool. There are some great ideas, great things that are in my heart. But perhaps I could either shift them so that they meet needs, or that they really address people, that I speak to certain groups if I know they're there. And so when I started to look at ways to understand, not just Amazon, but also Google, it gave me an opportunity to not only write what people needed, but to get it in front of them. And that was like a whole game changer for me.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think this is so important. And I've had Chris Fox on the show, and a lot of people go, oh, right to market. But actually what you're talking about as well is writing something that you're interested in, but also, as you say, meets needs. And sometimes it is just a little tweak with the words that you're using to describe exactly the same book, but you're just tweaking the words, right?
And not only that, sometimes it just creates a much better book. A great example of this was an author I was working with who was creating a book on how to sell art, right? Mm. And the focus on it was all about selling art, but they were approaching it from a traditional perspective of selling art on the street, selling art in the art galleries. However, though, when we did a research, we found out that a majority of people were typing it in, actually more people were typing in how to sell art online than people who were typing in how to sell art. And this author had nothing about the online aspect of art selling. Now, imagine the disappointment of shoppers who would go to Amazon, type in how to sell art, even though they're really wanting the online aspect, buy the book, pick it up, start reading it, and realize she never covered the online aspect. I'm sure she would have not only disappointed the readers, she probably would have gotten some bad reviews, people pointing out that she was too traditional. And again, it would have just ruined the entire experience. So armed with that information, she was able to add more to the book and create something that really delivered. But also a little trick too is that we knew that people wanted specific understanding about platforms. So what we did was we created the content upgrade of find out the 5 best online platforms for selling your art. And that was the email sign up. So it really changed the course or direction of the book, not just getting it in front of more people, but making the people happier in the same process.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So I prepared all these questions and now I've got a whole load more questions. So I'm going to follow that path because I think what you're talking about is really useful. And we're going to come into more detail around keywords and stuff. But you talk there about research and kind of understanding a different perspective. And I think this is where a lot of authors really struggle, because in their mind, like you say, they're like, I'm writing a book on how to sell art, or I have written a dark fantasy thriller. And that's what they type into. So let's use KDP Rocket because that's your tool, but also they could type that into Amazon themselves manually. They could type that into a Google keyword search tool. So whatever tool they type it into. But I think the issue with so many authors is they might be typing in the wrong thing to start with. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So let's take it up a level. How can we change our perspective on research around keywords so that we're not going too detailed right at the start?
Well, it's going to be a different strategy based on whether or not you're nonfiction or fiction, because with nonfiction, it's about solving a problem, a pain point, right? It's about discovering what it is somebody truly wants, the result they want to gain. But in fiction, it's about entertainment and it's description of the type of story you want. So when it comes to nonfiction, what I like to do is I like to create a couple of lists to help me generate some ideas and some seeds to start with. The first thing is I like to list the problem. Okay, what kind of problem does this solve? And I use the problem words, right? So if it's like, say the book is around, just off the top of my head, like quitting smoking, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is stop smoking. You know, the problem is family hates it. The problem, like I'm trying to think of all the problems that the smoking itself causes. The next list is the description of the problem, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked about what the problem causes. Then we move into the description of the problem itself. Like, how do I describe this, right? Stop smoking.
Or quit
the habit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like all these words that are the action to what the problem is. And then finally, the last one is the results. Okay. Mm-hmm. The benefits, freedom, right? Mm-hmm. I can now, you know, and I mean, I'm really just generating ideas, but it's, I can now hang out with people. I don't
run a marathon.
Smell like a chimney. I can run a marathon. I'm healthier. My doctor's happy. Like I will start creating the benefits. So we start with the before, during, and after in a way. Mm. Now with fiction, on the other hand, we start to move into a couple of categories. Okay. Number one is time periods. Okay. Remember, we're describing stories, and sometimes a time period makes a major change. We could be doing Civil War, medieval, modern, you know, futuristic, apocalyptic, you know, any significant event that it's sent around. Again, something Western, you know, if I say Caribbean, I'll bet you that already kind of denotes some type of story, right? I mean, the Caribbean could be a lot of things, but we're probably all thinking pirates. So, I mean, there are certain words and time periods that, you know, that are associated. So there's time periods. The next one is character types, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, is it a strong, independent woman? Is it a frail flower? Is it mutant? You know, or and better yet, I mean, just going off of that, you can start to break down into a lot more words because mutant has its own connotation. But, you know, you could do superhero. You could do, I'm not even a writer in that area, but you could probably come up with a lot. You know, werewolves, right? Lycans. I mean, there are all these different ways that you can describe certain characters, their character types, their character roles. Alpha male. So again, there's character types. Then the next one is what I call the subgenres. Okay, so you would say, well, I write a romance book. All right, let's dig a little deeper. What kind of romance book? Well, I write about finding love again. Okay, what are some of the words that Amazon's used in categories to be able to break that down further? Oh, well, second chance romance. Mm-hmm. Ah, see, that's what it is, right? Love again. That's what people are using. So now we have genre specifics. And then finally, we add another category in the fiction where we're trying to look for any special details in the story itself. Okay. We talked about time periods. Now it's like locations or significant like actions, like a nuclear holocaust, you know, something that is the trigger to the story. Divorce could be the trigger. Infidelity. I mean, I'm just trying to shotgun a couple of genres to show. But with those four areas, you can start to piece together really good terms that people use. One of my favorites was we were able to do research and found that one author's keyword phrase, and I won't use her name because I don't want to give her away her thing, but it was Victorian second chance romance with baby. Now, it sounds ridiculous. Like, what's the with baby part? But you have to remember us shoppers, when we're going into Amazon and we're typing in something, we were like trying to come up with the, how do I describe the story I want? Mm. And so we'll start, and then the last moment we'll add something. And I thought this was a perfect example because Victorian Second Chance is about like the Victorian era, right? So we now know the time frame. So we kind of know the situation. Second Chance Romance, which usually means mother who, you know, her husband for some reason, he's either left, died, maybe ran off to the war or something like that. He's gone. And she finds romance again. But at the last moment, it's like, no, I want this to kind of be a bit wholesome, not about some scandalousness, right? I want it to just be centered around family. Oh, she has a child. Let me add that in. So as you can see, we just broke down the psychology of a shopper in Amazon, and we start to figure out how they search for their stories. And so again, it really comes down to giving us knowledge. In this case, if you were like looking at writing a Victorian second chance romance, yeah, you've got some opportunity there. There's not that much competition, a lot of sales. But if you make something that's more around family, you're actually going to find a much easier opportunity to get to the right market and to sell the right book.
Wow. Okay. So I hope everyone right now has all the action points they need to go away. I mean, I think what you described there for the fiction was really useful because I do find nonfiction more obvious. I mean, my book titles for nonfiction are super obvious. but right. I think the fiction is very challenging. So that's super, super useful. I did want to ask you, so there's been this rumor that's kind of circulated over and over again. It keeps popping up. I saw it years ago and I saw it recently come back on a blog post on The Book Designer about keyword. It used to be called keyword stuffing. Now it's kind of called something else. But you mentioned there like Victorian second chance romance with baby. That to me is a long tail keyword, but it still means something in a human way. Whereas these articles potentially say, look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be human readable. What you should do is put as many keywords as you possibly can into each of those seven fields on Amazon, and somehow the algorithm will work it out. Now, of course, none of us really know what's going on with the algorithm, but what are your thoughts on sort of human readable keyword phrases versus stuffing?
Well, one of the great things about being the creator of KDP Rocket is we work with Amazon's API, which is kind of like their internal system. So I actually get to peek under the hood and see how it kind of does things in a programmatic way. And there is a really cool thing that I discovered in looking at this. And first off, I want to say, everybody listening to this, that is a great article. I love that article because what I love most about the person who wrote it was that he didn't just do a theory. He tested and he provided great data. I love that. Like, that's my favorite. So yeah, that's, I thought that was wonderful. Here's another thing we could add to that article, though. What he's saying is that there's 50 characters inside each box that you can put in. So, you know, putting in more words, Amazon will kind of piece together some of the words and then kind of show it. What we call this is a broad search, okay? For those who are doing Amazon marketing services or now Amazon advertisement, you can now select what way, like when you put in your keyword, you can ask Amazon whether it's a broad, whether it's specific, right? Well, what broad means is that, hey, Amazon, I have these five words. It's cool if you pluralize any of them. It's cool if you put them in different order. It's cool if you use just some of them. And I, looking at the way the API works, I believe that it is using the broad aspect. So kind of what he was alluding to, okay? And so, yes, you're right. You will get shown for more by having more words in it. However, this is my strategy, kind of using that information, but not going overboard, okay? Because like you said, overboard, we call that keyword stuffing, right? And keyword stuffing is not a cool thing. What I like to do, though, is I challenge myself to find a long tail keyword like you discussed. Like we said, Victorian second chance romance with baby. You're just about hitting your 50 characters already. And what's great about this long tail keyword is that, again, using the broad algorithm, the I think it's called a Boolean algorithm. Sorry, getting nerdy there. My bad. reeling it in. So it's saying, well, okay, that would, so he put in this term. Now we're going to say, well, what if the person puts second chance with baby? Okay, yeah. Hey, they had those words in there. Or baby Victorian second chance. That works too. See, that's how the algorithm's going to think. And what I want to challenge all listeners out there is when you're coming up with your keywords, don't go for one words. Don't go for two words. Okay. That's not the way to go about it. Challenge yourself and do your research until you find three, four, five words. And let that be a phrase that you know is a good phrase, even by itself. And then let Amazon expand that and grow your sales.
Okay, so because of course the other side of keyword, and just in case anyone's just starting out, Amazon allows two categories and seven keywords when you publish on their platform. So some people say that the keywords should be the browse categories. So for example, for me, if I use the keyword conspiracy thriller, I know that my book will also appear in the conspiracy thriller category, but that takes up one of my seven keywords. So how do you balance adding those browse category keywords with the long tail keywords, or should we just try and combine them?
No, actually, you know, I think that would have been the case pre-November 2017. See, what happened was that back before that time period, it was very hard to get Amazon to allow you to be in whatever category you wanted. It was also pretty hard, but kind of an inside information of getting Amazon to add you to more categories than just two. However, though, in November, they completely changed it. Now it's ridiculously easy to get the categories you want. Now, before I go into that, though, there are some categories that do specifically require a keyword in order to show up for it. Luckily, Amazon lists all of those. So when you're doing your category research, be sure to check that list. If the category you're targeting is not in that list, then don't waste your keyword just to get into it. Instead, follow a process. And I don't know if you have a video, but I've got a video on it showing me actually doing it. And I even got Amazon to call me. That's an option you can get them. They'll call you on your phone and you can be like, sweet, hey, change me to this, this, and this. And no kidding, like 5 seconds later, it's done. It okay. is so cool.
You need to send me that link so I can put it in the show notes so that everyone can see that, because I don't want to speak to anyone, but you know, still good.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the email option, which takes 24 hours.
Yeah. So let's do that one. Yeah.
But I'm not gonna lie. I was jazzed because it's rare to get Amazon to actually call you and actually provide a great result immediately. Mm. But this is one of those cases. So just to kind of recap, if you've got some target categories that you want to be in, verify that they don't require a keyword. If they don't, then just use the process and tell Amazon, hey, Amazon, please add my book to this category. And it's done. No waste of your keyword, one of your 7 keywords, to get it done. And it doesn't strengthen or weaken. One of the other things too, though, just to add to this, is that you can actually go up to 10 categories. You can add to 10 categories. However, you will only see 3 categories on your Amazon book sales page. There is a tactic where you can, if you take your ASIN number and you put it into the search, you can look on the left side and then see all the ones you're listed for. But do understand that you'll only see on your sales page 3, but you are showing up for the ones you requested, which can be up to 10.
Yeah, it's really annoying that they got rid of that. That, you know, it was like it used to be right at the bottom. You could scroll down and see where an author is, and now you have to go into each one. But what I would say, another tip for KDP Rocket, it does have a category feature, doesn't it? So you can analyze people's books and see the categories where things show up. So
absolutely,
I found that really, really useful.
I'm not gonna lie, the researching and finding a great category has actually been like one of my biggest banes. It's like my least favorite thing to do. That and write my author bio. But that's the cool thing about being an author who's got his own programming team. A lot of times they're just like, we could do something about that. Cool. Hey guys, guess what we're doing? That was my own pain point as an author, being like. And one of the cool things about that is that it will tell you how many books that day you need to sell in order to be number one for the bestseller. So you can quickly figure out that, hey, this category requires 143 books to be sold today. This one, though, only requires 8 and it's relevant to your book. I'd recommend the 8 one. But then again, you get 10. So why not, you know, show up for those? For all of them, even the 181.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And if anyone listening is kind of feeling like, oh my goodness, I just don't want to do this work, I totally feel for you. I mean, it really, and I think the other thing is, it's never actually over. I'm looking at some of my, you know, I've got like 28 books now, and most of them, I haven't updated the keywords since I published them. And some of them, you know, I'm like at 8 years that I haven't updated the keywords. So I'm just like, oh my goodness. And I started playing with Rocket again. And I've been using Rocket on and off when the book comes out. But now I'm like, oh, I really need to actually go back, because keywords and searches change all the time, don't they?
They do.
It's not a static thing. So should authors be concerned about updating things or moving categories? Do they cancel things out in any way?
Well, it doesn't happen all the time, but this happens, I would say, not a majority, but a large percentage of the time. People, just by refreshing their keywords, almost breathe a little bit new life into the book. So one of the things you can do is, if you've got a dead book, it hasn't had sales in a while, you could really just kind of breathe some life back into it just by changing the keywords. My analysis of what this is that Amazon sees you interacting with your book again. And it's going to give you a benefit of the doubt and kind of bump you up there. Now, they'll get you to show up in front of shoppers when you do this. But again, if the book cover is just terrible, you know, or the book description just is not going to happen. Yeah, you might have risen in the ranks, but that does not mean that equates to more sales. Mm-hmm. Where I'm seeing authors really benefit from it is where they're going in and doing a systematic approach and changing up a keyword and then finding the right combination of them. So Jason Paul is a phenomenal sci-fi writer. He's done an incredible job. And this was a strategy that him and I won't totally at the 20 Books Vegas conference we're just going off on. But what he'll do is he'll do his research. He'll find his 7 keyword phrases, and then he'll give it about a week or two. Then he'll come back and he'll change just 2 of them. Okay, not all of them, just 2. And he'll use some 2 new ones and he'll monitor. And what he'll see is maybe the sales go up or the sales go down or nothing happens. If the sales go down, then he immediately puts the old ones back and then changes 2 other ones. If the sales go up, you know, then in that case, great. He just found a better combination for his book. And then he'll go to the next 2. And he'll systematically just kind of change them and see what happens until he finally has what is the most optimized combination. Now, why is this a great thing? Well, number one thing with keywords is that just because you find this great keyword phrase that people are typing into Amazon and they're buying books, right? That does not mean that's a perfect one for you, okay? If we go back to Victorian Second Chance Romance with Baby. All right, look, if your cover doesn't show anything Victorian style.
And a baby.
Or a baby or a mother, like you're not, like you might jump up in the rankings. You may be right there in front of that market, but nothing is going to convince the person who has typed in the phrase that your book is the one. But whereas on the other side, if your book has that cover where, you know, it's the lady who looks like she's being shunned by a highbrow Victorian society and she's holding a child close, but there's one guy looking at her with interest. We just combined, you know, the phrase to the cover, and hopefully you've got a book description that furthers all the pain points and the cool plot twists and things that people are looking for in that style book. And guess what? Now you're going to find a great benefit. So again, this is kind of experimenting with keywords to find that right combination that brings the right market to see your book and then convert on it. So just take that systematic approach, change them up a bit, monitor, but don't go all nuclear and wipe them all and go, you know. Because who knows? I've seen people where they had some great keywords. They didn't realize that they were bringing them the traffic. They went in and changed them all, and all of a sudden their sales dropped. You know, it's like you had something that was truly working for you. Make sure you know which one that is before you go apocalyptic on them.
Oh, okay. So I have so many questions. And it's so funny because, of course, I've been doing this for years as well. But I think things are changing quite a lot at the moment. So one of my questions is around what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, and it's still not moved over completely, but CreateSpace moving to KDP print, which means now on kdp.amazon.com, we've got print books as well as ebooks. Now, we've always had the ability to put keywords into CreateSpace or Ingram Spark, but it's not been the same as Amazon keywords. So with Rocket, I guess, but also just in general with research, what are the differences between keywords that you might find for a print book versus for an ebook? And then I guess even for an audiobook, because I personally, when I go shopping for audiobooks, I actually shop on Amazon because the Audible search is so terrible. So What are your thoughts on format and keywords?
Well, there are definitely certain styles of book that require a certain format. Like, for example, if you're writing a study guide, you know, you're going to have a hard time beating out others if all you have is an ebook, right? So The market isn't thinking to themselves, I need to explain that I'm looking for a physical book in this case, right? They're just expecting it. So we're going to have times where just because of the content that the market's not going to write anything different. Same thing with coloring book. You're not going to get away with an ebook on coloring book, right? Adult coloring book. I don't think so. Whereas we start to get to a point where the market will describe what they're looking for is in this case, like things like free, book, but those are things that we can't put as one of our keywords, right? Mm-hmm. So just something to consider with that. Another aspect though, is that in Audible, and you're absolutely right, Audible's search function sucks. And I'll explain why that is in a second. But I'll go to Audible when I know that there's a book I want. And I'm not going to lie, I'm actually not a reader. I'm a listener. I crush out like 4 or 5 Audibles a month and I love it. I just have ADHD to the point that I can't sit with a book. I know.
And you're still a reader. No guilt. You're a reader. It's absolutely fine. It goes in your brain. It's all good.
I've had so many wine nights with some friends of mine that will argue about that. It's like, can you say you read? And I'm like, yes,
yeah,
I read.
Totally. Yeah.
Anyways. So, but I'll go to Audible when I know that there's a specific book that I want, type it in, find it, click it, and go. But I'm not going to lie, like I will still go to Amazon when I'm looking for my next sci-fi flick and fix, and I'll type in whatever it is, which me, I'm not going to lie, I'm a sci-fi military space marines alien horde guy.
That's a really good long tail keyword.
It actually is. I'm not going to lie. Any of the sci-fi guys out there, go for that one. It's good. And then let me know and I'll read it. So, you know, I'll type that in, but I'm not gonna lie. I'm not buying the book if it doesn't have the Audible. I will click and look because I'm always trying to see. And sometimes I have bought a book because it looked too cool and the author doesn't have an Audible yet. But most of the time I'll just select it. So I think that overall, a major majority of people don't think specifically to search for a type of book. If they do, they're just selecting in the Amazon search. They'll go either Kindle or book and go that route. But otherwise, though, from a research perspective, we're not seeing any differentiators in the words that people type because people just quickly go up to the top of Amazon, type in a phrase and click search. And then maybe they'll start to augment and change things as they go until they finally find the product they're looking for. But to step back on the why Audible's search sucks and why Amazon's really good is because Amazon uses a company called A9 to actually do their search algorithm. And it's phenomenal. They're great. They do a good job. They do not use it for Audible, or at least at the time of this recording, they do not. Instead, they're using a different algo to be able to pull that information. And what we found with Amazon is that Amazon, while Amazon owns CreateSpace and they own Audible, this is like left hand, right hand. They don't talk to each other. Anybody who has published on CreateSpace and then talked to them, which they had much better customer support than Amazon. It's funny. They'll say things. It's like, oh yeah, you can do that. And then you'll go to Amazon. They're like, no, we don't do that. It's like, but CreateSpace said, that's like, but that's CreateSpace. It's like, but that's Amazon. They're like, no. So we find that there's a lot of major differences between the different areas. So
yeah, I was going to say, these are companies that they bought, and therefore the whole back end system is completely different. What I would say on the print things is I have found that large print, people are searching for large print and specifically. So there's a little key. And I seem to have started my own large print resurgence.
Nice.
Because there are specific keywords and people are looking for large print books. Plus, if people are wide and they publish through Ingram Spark, a lot of libraries will buy large print. So there's a little tip for people with print.
I'm going to have to do some research today on that because that sounds like
a
really good point.
Yeah, you'll see. So I've started to do large print editions because of the keywords that are available for large print. I probably just shot myself in the foot by announcing that, but I have talked about it before on the show.
That's a really good point. And I bet you too that that's tied with certain demographics.
Exactly.
You know, I would say, look, if you're writing a book for millennials, that's probably not,
Well, it's interesting. It's obviously visually impaired, but mm-hmm. also, like you say about dyslexic, a lot of dyslexics find it easier to read in with larger font, but there's also specific fonts you can use. But the larger print, it's a really interesting, demographic. I've had a lot of emails from people on the show who are really happy with more large print books. So I'm now on a bit of a crusade to get everyone doing a large print edition. But let me ask my other question. I had. So we've talked about the keywords that we're going to use on Amazon in the keyword field. And obviously that field's also there for Drafter Digital and all the other, sites. Well, not all of them, but most of them have keyword fields. What about our Amazon advertising keywords? So people are doing their research. They've come up with their seven. Do they then use those same keywords on Amazon advertising? They just changed the name, right? That's why we're stumbling over it. But do they use those same keywords, or do they then use those as a seed for a whole load of new ones? And of course, again, little nudge on Rocket does help you with lists of keywords. But I know that people are like, okay, well, I've got my seven, so that's my Amazon ads.
Right. Well, the people who first off, I think you brought up a great point. I love to use them as seed words. Okay. So I have my seven and I will start to really investigate and pull from there, because what people who are probably either learning or already know on Amazon AMS, I'll just call it AMS for ease.
Yeah.
Just because it's like a habit. Is that if you're only doing 7, 8, 9 keywords, you're not going to get any traction on AMS. Typically, you're looking at hundreds, if not thousands. And so how do you generate that? And I think that that's a very important part, is understanding what your seed keywords are, using those to grow out a very large but pertinent list, and then uploading those. Now, one of the really cool things about AMS that I absolutely love is that for the first time, we get to see numbers. I am such a diehard number guy. I love it because I can now look at my AMS dashboard and I can see that Amazon showed my book like 150,000 times. And out of those 150,000 different shoppers, there was like 400 clicks. That means that out of the 150,000 times that somebody passed by my book, 400 people saw the cover and it intrigued them. They saw the title, they saw the reviews, and they saw the blurb. And it was enough to get them to click to look a little bit more in. Mm-hmm. Now, what's really neat about this is that you can then break it down to another phase. Okay, out of the 400 clicks, 80 of them bought it. That means that I had 400 people, okay, or in this case, 320 came to the page, didn't like what I presented, or weren't interested enough, and they left. Now, what's really cool about this is we can break that down and say, all right, well, what if our number out of 150,000 was 4 clicks, right? What if out of 100 clicks, only one person bought? If we break this down, we can look and find where the problem lies with our book. And I just absolutely love this, because you can say, you know, that, hey, my friends and family love this book cover, but the numbers can show that 150,000 people saw your book and only one person even noticed it enough to give it some attention and click on it. And then on top of that too, is that they got to your sales page, your book page, they read your book description, and 99 of them totally were not interested and left. I've used this type of number analysis to really improve a lot of books. A while ago, I was a consultant to Galaxy Press and was brought in to look at their numbers. The first thing I did was I said, all right, show me your AMS ads. I want to see where these books are succeeding and where they're failing. And on one particular book, they had had really good, they had just changed the cover on this one and it was awesome. And they had had some really good clicks, but the sales were just horrible. I mean, they were just like, it was like, you got to be kidding me. And we're talking like thousands of clicks and only less than 100, you know, actual purchases. So what we did was I actually went through and I rewrote their book description, and kind of, and at first the publishing company was like, no, we like our book description. I was like, no, this is terrible book description. The reason being is that you're giving me a book report. This is not intriguing. It is not, it's too much information. You're telling me the entire story. You're bringing up characters that I should not care about at this point. And I wrote this other one, and I used pickfu.com, which is a online service where you can like pay big money and they will show it in front of people and those people can vote which one they like better. But what's more important is they put the comments in there. Using this, it was able to quickly show that my new book description was way better in front of people than others. It was something like 70% chose mine, 30% chose theirs. And I kind of made a mistake, because in the title I said, which one's the better book description? But reading the comments of the people that liked the other one, they had said, oh, I've read this book. This one explained more. So I was like, oh, my bad. So when they implemented the new book description, they tripled their conversion rate on the book. They had the same number of clicks, but they had 3 times more people actually buying. So it goes to show that for once, we can take our book, put it through AMS, and actually see what is working. We can see what keywords are actually converting more buyers. We can see where the problem lies with our book. Is it the book cover that stinks? Is it the book description that stinks? And what's even more important about all of this is that after you've solved the problem, okay, whether it's a better cover or a better description, all of your other marketing efforts are going to have much better fruit. You're going to get more from them because you solved where the customers were not buying your book. You fixed it. And whether you're doing any of the promotions that you're doing, you're going to see better things come from it.
Oh, and do you know what? When we talk about this stuff, it makes, I know some people will be still feeling like this is way too much work, but I do think that part of being an indie author this is part of the job. And I just finished my latest novel and I'm in that kind of, it's the finishing stage. So I know the book's done, but what I haven't done, I have identified some initial keywords so I can get the pre-order out. But now I know that the piece of work I need to do is really going into this in more detail. And it's, so it's part of that finishing energy. But it's so funny because I totally get why traditional publishers don't do this stuff. I mean, when you, I mean, I'm managing 28 books now of my own. Can you, I mean, if you imagine them, you know, managing hundreds of thousands of books, this type of stuff is, it's much better to know your own book, right? And to come up with those things like we talked about at the top of the interview. I just can't imagine how traditional publishers can manage this. So as indies, we have to be like, okay, this is a bit of work, but once we do the work, you can, I mean, how long can we set and forget? Maybe, I know I've left it too long, but 6 months to a year before you need to update?
Well, with AMS, it depends on how much you want to get from AMS. I tell people who are like really focusing on that, that you're probably updating your campaigns at least twice a week.
You know, because, I guess I meant on Amazon, on the Amazon keywords. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, I would say what I'd like to do is I would like to do that optimization sequence that we talked about, find that right pairing. So, you know, give it a month or two right after it's published to tweak it and find where it's going. And then after that, if you start to see where like the sales dropped, like there is actually a significant drop, that's when I would trigger to go back in and kind of tweak them. As well as maybe, you know, if you're not doing AMS ads, give it a little push, give it a punch there with some AMS sales so that Amazon's like, oh, okay, hey, look at that. You know, there's more sales, more life. Mm-hmm. I have found that AMS has a great benefit because what you continue to show Amazon using AMS ads is that even after like 3 months after you published, your book is still making sales. Like it's still alive. And it's the A9 algorithm's almost like, it's almost like it doesn't know that you're doing AMS, you know, in a way. But it's like, hey, this book keeps making sales. Let's keep showing it. So you have a lot of benefits to doing that. So I would say if you start to see a drop, change up your keywords, you know, tweak it, see what's happening. That's right. Give it a few ads, pump it back with a bit of life, you know, get yourself up to that spot.
Yeah. So I know we're actually almost out of time, but do you have a bit more time? Because I still have some more questions. Thank you so much. Okay. So these questions are entirely selfish. So you have on Rocket, you have Google keywords and you have Amazon keywords. So one of the things I've built, you know, and you are also with Kindlepreneur, a nonfiction business based on content marketing. So offering podcasts, blog posts around keywords that people are searching for on Google, generally, you know, things about self-publishing and this type of thing. And we both have useful stuff. But fiction is an entirely different kettle of fish, as we've talked about with keywords, but also for content marketing. So, and I feel like because I've built a business on almost 10 years worth of content for nonfiction, I want to do it for fiction. And so far, I've not done a great job of content marketing for fiction. So my question with Google keywords versus Amazon keywords is, so we have our list of keywords for our book. You know, we can obviously go and test that on Google, but should we kind of assume that those are the same keywords that people use on Google, or are there completely different types of keywords for Google versus Amazon?
Yeah, so there are pretty much two different psychologies, right? Typically, we may start our, what I call the buyer venture or the buyer journey on Google. You know, maybe you have like lower back pain and you're like, oh man, you know, I need to figure out what's going on here. And then finally you're like, you know what? I'm going to go to Amazon and get a book on this because I don't have time to go through all these. Somebody lay it out for me, please. That's more the nonfiction side. From science or from fiction, on the other hand, content, it's completely different, right? A lot of people will go to Amazon with the intention of, I want my book. However, though, in Google, typically, people will search on Google looking for things of interest, you know, like some of the best content that you can definitely come up with if you're a fiction writer as a website is start listing your subgenres best books, okay? Top 10, and again, not sci-fi books, right? That's going to be impossible to rank for, but maybe it's cyberpunk, top 10 cyberpunk books, top 10 alternate history books, okay? Whatever you're writing in, or in this case, maybe Victorian Second Chance.
You know, with baby.
That's right. With baby. But no, whatever the sub-genre. So again, we're almost using those keywords again. But in this case, if you think about it, I may just be browsing and just trying to find what's the next best, you know, Victorian second chance romance or just second chance romance book out there. I'm going to go to Google to kind of learn that. And then I'm going to turn around and either click a link to go to Amazon to purchase a book from there, or I'm going to go to Amazon and type in that book title and look. So I would say that that's one. So best book list. Another one too is character types. So if you're in, say in like science fiction, I saw an author who wrote an article that was like the best 25 sci-fi weapons. You know, and they listed off like, you know, some of the most iconic weapons from, you know, the Marines assault rifle in Aliens to the big gun in the Fifth Element. There was like, and it was really cool. And as a sci-fi nerd, I was enjoying seeing this nostalgia. That again is something I would turn to Google and not Amazon. But what's really neat about those two types of content, right? List of maybe, you know, say top 10 vampires, you know, or a list of whatever, is that you're bringing in your kind of reader, right? We're not just writing articles to bring in people. Those articles are bringing in the right people, the people who are going to Google because they love vampire books so much. They want to look at a list of the top 10 vampires, you know, in literature. They want to look at, you know, the best books in a subgenre. And I would much rather have, say, just 200 of those people than 10,000 of just book readers, right? Because now I know that the 200 people coming here, they're so interested in my kind of book that they're on their own time looking and researching and nerding out, you know, and booking out, we'll say, and trying to find their next thing. So, and if you're a writer on that, you know, let's be serious. I wouldn't put yourself as the top 10, you know, best sci-fi book of all time, right? You might mention yourself in a much smaller niche. That's your decision. But I would definitely at the end of it say, you know, hey, I'm a huge lover of cyberpunk. You know, having read all of these books, I wrote my book, which mimics these. If you think that my list is great and I've got an understanding of this genre, I highly recommend you check out my book. Let me know what you think in the comments. That's a great, you know, transition from the board searcher looking for something to potentially finding your book, getting it on the radar and making more sales just from your content.
Yeah, I think that's good. And actually, going back to exactly what you said at the beginning, that time period, character types, subgenres, details, locations. So, for example, I went just before we came on, I went to Rocket and had a look at Ark of the Covenant. So one of my books, Ark of Blood, is about the Ark of the Covenant. And actually, there's a lot of books on the Ark of the Covenant. It's a, you know, it's a common MacGuffin in the thriller niche. But then what was great was that a number of Google searches came up. So for example, where is the Ark of the Covenant? Actually, that would make quite a good article on
absolutely
a website. So I think it's good to kind of think, okay, so the Ark of the Covenant, you know, might be a keyword, but where is the Ark of the Covenant is actually one of those longer tail keywords, right?
Exactly. So in this case, what you've shown here is that if somebody's taking time out of their day to go to Google and type in this, they're really interested in this type of item. They're probably wanting to be entertained by it, which means that if your fiction is about that thing, there's a really strong possibility that you're going to make a good connection with a good type of reader who will enjoy your book. And so, you know, not only do we do lists, but also look for general interests. Again, I'm a sci-fi guy, so it's hard not to say sci-fi here. But one of the things that I've also loved too is assisting in showing like hard science. You know, if somebody's looking at like, well, something like, you know, the mass, this is going to be too super dorky, but in the sci-fi realm, it's important to really provide good, strong science when you're talking about it. So like, you know, hey, in a vacuum, you know, would such and such happen, right? But to be able to write in your book when you're doing research and, you know, put in, well, you know, when this happened, there was no scream in space because, you know, I mean, that's important. So you're starting to get other authors coming to your content as well. So writing about the subject or how do you write about this particular niche-centric thing will bring in, and not only that might increase your sales. But one of the things I love is networking with other authors. So if you're bringing other authors in your genre to your blog, that gives you an opportunity to be able to communicate with them, potentially coordinate with them, and collaborate, you know, as you move forward, not just in book writing, but in book marketing and sales and others' email lists. So writing for the other authors as well as the readers can be a great benefit to growing your, not only your email list, but also your sales.
Okay, well, final question, because I could ask you questions forever, but I'm not going to. So final question. So one of the things, you know, people are very concerned about the amount of spam bots and books, you know, arriving on Amazon, that people who are very technically minded are managing to get into all these categories. Like, for example, there are a lot of romance books in sub categories that are not romance these days.
Right.
So there's a lot of issues, let's say, with the way that the algorithm is serving the reader as a customer. And in fact, I was telling someone for the first time ever in the history of my relationship with Amazon, I've actually gone to iBooks to have a look at what they are curating and then gone back to Amazon to buy, which is shocking. And mainly that's because of how much is being served through the ads. So what I wondered is, because of your knowledge of SEO and the history of SEO on Google, what we saw maybe, what, 3 or 4, maybe 5 years ago, I can't remember, when Panda and Penguin updates went through and completely decimated the not very good content stuff that was there. Do you think that some kind of update is going to clean up Amazon? Because I just can't see it sustainable in the way it is going forwards.
You know, Google's funny. They're always tweaking the algorithm. They're always making changes. Matter of fact, they even just came out with a new one called Medic, or that's been coined by the SEOers, called Medic. And I love their company for what they're doing, because that is their one thing, right? Google is Alphabet.
They do a lot now.
They do a lot now, but that is their true baby, right? Mm. Amazon's true baby is the Amazon store in AWS, right? A9 is a company that they have basically, that they bought out ultimately, that they then use to kind of do the algorithm and list out the books or the products, right? Mm. And like we talked about earlier, is the left hand doesn't talk to the right hand, okay? From what I've seen, again, this is my thoughts, so no hard data on this one, but what I have seen is that over the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years or so, Amazon really hasn't made many changes when it came to its algorithm. They may change what they display, like we were talking about the category strings and, you know, how you got to use ASIN number to actually see what you rank for now. But there's really been zero dramatic shifts. There's been zero, you know, A9 changes. We have seen them go a little militant on reviews, you know, to the point that they're hurting legitimate reviews and legitimate authors. But I have definitely seen some illegitimacy get automatically taken out. I think that they're on a crusade on that one. We did see court cases come up because they were suing, that Amazon was actively suing people for doing it. We've also seen Amazon actively sue people, you know, who were, or shut down their accounts when they were doing some stuffing for the, you know, hurting the KU, the Kemp people out there. They are acting on that. But when it comes to the A9, I haven't seen a thing. And just to reiterate, left hand doesn't talk to the right hand. And we just, so I'm, from a search result perspective, I don't think that that's going to change. But I think the number one way that Amazon's A9 algorithm works sort of makes it that it's still okay. Like, it's almost to get away from the trap. Mm. One hack, shall we say, that one can always do to make themselves rank number one is that if you have somebody who is going to buy your book, instead of sending them a link, just tell them, hey, type in Victorian Second Chance Romance with Baby and then find my book, click it and buy it. If you have enough people do this, it will make it immediately jump up to number one and you'll sit at the top, right? Now, there might be people who's going to claim, you know, scream foul for me saying this, but here's the beautiful thing about the algorithm is that after you're done manipulating, shall we say, okay, not in a negative way, but you're done giving your book an opportunity to show up at the top. Mm. If your book does not deserve to be there, Amazon's A9 algorithm will find out real quick. because when people naturally type in the phrase Victorian second chance romance with baby, and they don't select yours, but they select the one under it, you will drop down in the rankings. So the telltale factor for A9 is what makes Amazon more money, right? What is actually getting clicked on? And they have other factors to kind of figure out whether or not it's a good long-term thing. Like, for example, if the reviews come in and it's just constantly a one star, it will drop, even though it was getting the clicks. It will finally drop down and it will start to kind of die off because Amazon's seeing the later effects. So I just kind of gave this explanation to let us know that from what shows in the results, that one I don't see changing because the true nature is what makes Amazon more money and why is Amazon going to stop the money problem, right? You know, like, but with regards to categories, so that's kind of something different. That's not the A9 algorithm. That's their category selection. I've seen Amazon start to take more action in removing people from categories. Mm-hmm. I also think that the process that we talked about asking Amazon, you're giving Amazon a human interaction. Okay. There's somebody who's actually checking your request. So, you know, if you wrote a book on, you know, alien invasion, don't go selecting a quantum, you know, physics category,
textbook or something. Yeah.
Textbook, you know, category. That ain't going to fly. So I think that might've been one of the reasons why they did what they did.
Yeah, no, good point. Right, we're definitely out of time now. So tell us, tell everyone what KDP Rocket is if they haven't heard of it. And I know you've got some changes coming up. So tell us a bit more about Rocket.
Sure. Well, one of the things that always helped me was doing the research that we just talked about, finding out what words people type into Amazon, how many people are actually typing it in, and also what kind of competition am I going to face, you know, in order to get my book to show up in front of that market. And beforehand, I used to use these crazy Excel sheets, super number craziness to be able to figure it out. Well, I got a programming team together. We created a software that does all that for you. You know, with a click of a button, it lays out exactly what words people are typing in. It gives you a number to understand how many people actually type it in and also what the competition level is. But the cool thing, like I said before, about being a author that has a programming team is we just kept adding to the program. We have a competition analyzer that gives you details about who you're facing and what they're doing. We have the category feature that totally saves time in trying to find the right categories, especially now that you have 10 you can go for. You know, let's get that process a little more effective and efficient. And then finally, too, with AMS, we talked about with doing AMS ads. We're looking at hundreds, if not thousands, of keywords to do it effectively. Let's use a program to find effective and efficient, you know, manner of gathering those keywords so that authors don't spend so much time copying and pasting and clicking and going here and there, and let them get back to their book.
Yeah.
And of course, we have a version 2.0 coming out, and anybody who owns KDP Rocket, you always get our updates and upgrades for free. That's one thing I hate most about software is when they do that to me. But we're making it cleaner, faster, better. We also have new features coming out to include international markets and also making it so that AMS ads, you can really tell Rocket what you want it to do and it will pull. So that filter actually should be coming out next week. And yeah, so a lot of really cool stuff. It's just fun being an author who's got a programming team.
Oh, it's fun for the rest of us to watch you having fun and then use the tool. And I'm glad you're doing the international markets because, of course, the AMS UK, a lot of us are using that. And the stores are very different. The categories are different. Like, everything's different, which is a right pain when you have to publish once on multiple platforms. But yeah, this is, again, as Amazon says, this is only day one, right? You know, there's going to be a lot more developments. So you have, people can also, you tell us, where can people find you and everything you do online?
Yeah, well, you can find me at kindlepreneur.com. And to this day, if anybody has any questions whatsoever, if you go to my contact page, hit me up, I will reply. I still do that. And so yeah, if we covered something that you had a question about, or it was a little too fast, or you want to dig deep on something, let me know.
Oh, thanks so much. And I will link to all your tutorials and Rocket and everything. And thank you so much, Dave. That was so useful to me personally. And I know to everyone listening. So thanks again for your time.
No problem. And again, thank you so much for having me.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Dave Chesson today and that it inspires you to update your keywords. Next week, I'll be doing a roundup of what I learned at Novelists Inc. in Florida. So look forward to that solo show. And in the meantime, happy writing week, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.